Parshas Chukas, we have the story of the Nechash and Nechoshes, the brazen serpent. The story begins that the Jewish people are complaining about being taken out of Egypt. Why did you do it? Kein lechem, bein mayim, v'nafshenu kotza b'lechem aklokel. We have no bread, we have no water, we don't like the bread that we have, the man. In this case, the Jews were punished severely. The commentators explain that they weren't punished earlier at the story of the Mei Meriva. There they were genuinely desperate. They were legitimately desperate. They were dying of thirst. Here, they had stuff. They had water. They had bread. They didn't like the bread they had. They didn't like the money they had. They didn't like being dependent on God for constant nisim. But here, this was more of a discretionary complaint. This was not such a legitimate complaint. So they had Hashem brought a terrible plague of serpents upon them, killing them. So the Jews do tshuva. They say chatanu. They confess they were wrong. So Hashem decides to save them. He instructs Moshe, take a saraf, a fiery serpent, place it on a pole. Anyone who sees it shall live. Moshe did so. Moshe made the Nechash Nechoshes, places it on the pole. And if anyone is bitten, he contemplates the snake, the Nechash Nechoshes, the brazen serpent, and he lives. Famous Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, the Mishnah says it wasn't magic. It wasn't that the serpent had some kind of totemic power to heal. It was rather that when a person looked at the serpent and contemplated that Hashem is Memesu Mechaya, it's all from Hashem, and by that realization, that religious experience, he would be able to be healed, and that was how it worked. There are actually several important biblical artifacts mentioned in this parasha, in the Torah in general. Here we have the Nechash Nechoshes, we have the Moshe's staff, which he struck the stone at Mei Meriva. The stone itself was a famous biblical, certainly according to the Midrash. You know, all over the Bible, all the great biblical artifacts, we don't know, you know, for a certainty what happened to most of them. You know, there are rumors that some of the utensils of the Mishkan or the Mikdash are in the basement of the Vatican. You know, the Ark of the Covenant in particular, we know where it is. It's in a giant warehouse in Nevada, in Area 51. But the one thing we do know, the one artifact, biblical artifact, whose fate we do know is the Nechash HaNechoshes, as we've discussed previously, because the Navi tells us what happened to it. The Navi tells us in Malachim it was destroyed by King Chizkiah. It says that many centuries later, half a millennium later, in the first temple era, so it says Chizkiah was a great king, one of the greatest tzaddikim, one of the most righteous kings among the Malchai Yehuda. In particular, he was noted for his anti-idolatry crusade. So he, a bad word, I guess, to use for anti-idolatry, but he, for his campaign against idolatry, says he broke, that he removed the bamos, the different types of altars they used to use, shiberas and matzevos, he demolished other types of altars, karas es ha'ashera, he cut down the sacred trees that the idolaters worshipped, and also, the chites nechash nechoshes asher asa Moshe, he pulverized, he crushed the brazen serpent that had been made by Moshe. Why? The Navi tells us why. Ki ad hayam mehema, until that time, until the time of King Chizkiah, hayu bnei Yisrael mekatrim lo v'yikrilo nechushtan. They worshipped it, they offered incense to it, they called it nechushtan, some kind of god, and therefore he destroyed it as part of his campaign against Avodah Zarah. So in previous years we discussed the idea of religious innovation. The Talmud in Chulin has a passage describing how, offering this as a precedent for the idea that if you have a good idea, a good religious idea, you can't immediately knock it down by saying, well, the same situation existed in my father's time and generations past, and they were great tzaddikim, and they were great Torah scholars, and they didn't do this. How do I know better? Mara says, no, sometimes at least we say, makom nichulanu min hashamayim l'sgader, that sometimes Hashem wants us to have the chance to do our own thing, to take a step that wasn't taken. The parameters of that are not so clear, but that was something we discussed previously. I want to discuss tonight, put this question of the pulverization of the serpent into a broader context. The Mishnah, or Brisa, according to some texts, in Psachim, says that there were six great things that Chizkiah did. Now, obviously, Chizkiah did many things in his life. There are apparently six particularly noteworthy, particularly provocative, particularly bold, particularly important things, six great actions that Chizkiah did during his tenure as king. It says three of them, his peers, the Chachamim, others, Hodulo, three of them were endorsed, and they had met with the approval of the other Torah scholars at the time, and three met with disapproval. Now, I have to admit, my knowledge of Nach is not as strong as it could be. Whenever I read one of these Gemaras that talks about biblical figures, I always have this uncomfortable feeling that I don't know how much of the Gemara is based on Psukim that I'm simply ignorant of, and how much is actually just based on Midrash and traditions of which Chazal had without reference to the psukim. In this particular case, it took a while of looking and tracking down and checking to figure out which of these six things were actually rooted in explicit biblical texts, which were less rooted. As it turns out, three or four of these things are based on explicit biblical verses. The last two or three are based on, are more drash or barely alluded to in the text. The six things are as follows. The Mishnah or Brisa in Psachim says, the three good ones, the three that met with the approval of his peers, were Girer Atmos Aviv al Mita Shel Chavalim. He treated the remains of his father, the bones of his father, in a humiliating way. And that they agreed. That was a good idea. Strange thing to do. This is actually not an explicit pasuk. This is based on a pasuk that describes his father Achaz, how he was buried. He wasn't buried in the normal catacombs of the kings. He was buried somewhere else, and doesn't say what they did to him, but Chazal apparently are elaborating on that and explaining he was deliberately treated in a humiliating way by his son. Different nuances to this given by the Gemara and the commentaries. Mishum Kapara, his son Achaz was a Rasha. Chizkiah wanted him to have a Kapara in this world so that he wouldn't be punished in the next. Alternatively, there was an idea of making a Kiddush Hashem, Rashi says. Alternatively, he was Eina Osim Masei Amcha. The mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim doesn't apply to a parent who is a villain like this. But whatever this is not clearly alluded to in the Pasuk, but not explicitly stated in the Pasuk. This is Chazal's interpretation of a Pasuk. We're not going to go too deeply into that one. The second one is Kites Nechash HaNechoshes. This is the most explicit. This is a Pasuk we read. Kites Nechash HaNechoshes Asher Asa Moshe. The Hodulo, Rashi says, Shayutoa Macharov, they had been led astray and worshipped as an idol. And again, that act and that reason are explicit, both explicit in Malachim. Third one, this is the one we're going to focus primarily on tonight, is Gona Sefer Refuos. He hid something called the Sefer HaRefuos, the book of treatments, the book of medical treatments. The Hodulo, they agreed. What is the Sefer HaRefuos? Why did he hide it? Why do they agree with him? That we'll discuss for the bulk of our talk. In the meantime, we'll just note that this is the one that is perhaps least attested to in the biblical text. There is nothing about a Sefer HaRefuos anywhere in the discussion of Chizkiah's career. It's based on a Gemara in Brachos. Chizkiah, at one point in his life, in a dialogue with God, Chizkiah asserts to God that he has behaved well, that he has been a tzaddik throughout his life, and he says, "Vatov beinecha asisi." He tells God, "I have done that which is good in your eyes." That's a very general, very broad term, but the Talmud says, according to one interpretation, which is the one we're following here in Psachim, is that he hid the Sefer Refuos. Again, we'll discuss what that was and why soon, but this is perhaps the least clearly attested to by the pshat of the biblical text itself. These were the three that were Hodulo, the three that Chazal approved of, the Chacham approved of, the three that were Lo Hodulo. One of them is that he cut down the doors of the Heichal, the doors of the first chamber of the temple, and he sent the doors of the Heichal, part of the temple, and he sent them to Melech Asher, Sancheirav. So the reason he did that was because he was being besieged by Sancheirav, and he was desperate, so he wanted to pay him off and give him a bribe to get him to go away. And that was Lo Hodulo. They did not agree. To some extent, it was not really a political dispute, it was a religious dispute, but the commentaries offer different explanations. Either he should have had more bitachon that Hashem would save him from Sancheirav, as Hashem eventually did, one of the great nisim, when Hashem saved the Jewish people under Chizkiah from Sancheirav, or the Tiferes Yisrael says he should have picked something else to pay off Sancheirav. He didn't have to use the doors of the Heichal. He could have found some other treasure, even if it would have been inconvenient. But this was Lo Hodulo. This is an explicit pasuk. Kitzeitz Dalsos HaHeichal. It's again explicit pasuk in Malachim. It says, Ba'isahi, Kitzeitz Chizkiah, Dalsos HaHeichal Hashem, and he gave them to Melech Asher, Sancheirav. That one is explicit. The fifth one is Sasam Me Gichon. He sealed up the spring of Gichon, Lo Hodulo. This was, again, a question of military strategy, of geopolitics, that Chizkiah did it to deny the enemy a chance to use the stream, the besieging enemy, a chance to use the stream for its own purposes. And again, Rashi, the commentary, say that the issue was one of Bitachon again. The Navi had explicitly promised that the city of Yerushalayim would be saved from Sancheirav, Veganosi al Erezos, Laoshia. Chizkiah should have had more faith in God's promise and not taken extraordinary measures like this to seal up the spring. And Tiferes Yisrael says, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that destroying productive and useful parts of the land of Israel is a very serious step, which should not be taken if there's any other choice. And here, particularly, there were other rivers involved, and there was a promise from Hashem. That was the complaint against Chizkiah. This one again is an explicit pasuk in again Divrei Yamim or Malachim. Divrei Yamim, I think this one is the Megichon. And the last thing has to do with the calendar. It says that he made an illegitimate adjustment to the calendar. He made Iber Nisan Benisan Vlohodulo. That's not explicit in the Pesukim. That refers to the Navi does refer to a decision he made that went to celebrate Pesach, which Chazal interpreted to mean that he adjusted the calendar in an illegitimate way. Again, we're not going to get into the pros and cons, why or why not. We're going to focus primarily on the Sefer Refuos along with the Nechash and Nechoshes, and touch on the issue of sealing the spring of Gichon and cutting down the doors of the Heichal. So what is the Sefer Refuos? Why did Chizkiah hide it, and why did his peers approve? So the most popular pshat, the most popular interpretation of the Sefer HaRefuos among the Rishonim, is that the Sefer HaRefuos was exactly what it sounds like. It was a book of medical knowledge, a textbook, a collection of journals or something. It was a repository of genuine or authentic medical knowledge. Sounds like a very useful thing to have around. Why would he have hidden it? So those who understand the Sefer HaRefuos this way make a theological argument. They say that people who had the Sefer HaRefuos, when they got sick, instead of engaging in a religious reaction to the disease, doing a cheshbon nefesh, deciding what they had done wrong, seeking counsel with prophets, doing tshuva, praying to Hashem, having bitachon, faith in Hashem, trust in Hashem, instead of all those religious reactions to disease, they would instead say, no problem, we got this. They would pull out the Sefer HaRefuos. They would use it to heal themselves, and they would fail in their proper religious devotion, which was expected by God in reaction to the sickness he had brought upon them. The way Rabbeinu Bachya, Alatara, for example, expresses this idea, he's writing back on Parshas Bashalach, where it says, in Mara, it says, Shem Sam Lo Choku Mishpat, that Hashem established Choku Mishpat, laws, different types of laws, many different explanations in the commentaries about what laws were given at Mara. The Torah wasn't given until Sinai. Later, what was given at Mara? So Chazal say Shabbos or other mitzvahs, but Rabbeinu Bachya brings an explanation. Choku Mishpat was law as in natural law, as in natural science. He gave him laws of nature, herbal knowledge, knowledge about various types of botanical species and what their properties were, how they could be used to help or harm humans. He gave him essentially medical herbal knowledge that was useful for the betterment of humanity, that herbs have all kinds of properties. They can mechaya, they can be mamis, they can bring death or life, they can heal and otherwise, and so on. And the continuation of the pasuk, he says, is Hashem followed that by saying, after he gave him this information, it says, Im shema tishma b'kol Hashem lokecha, if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Lord and do what I want and do what I tell you to do, Hashem says, then I will take care of you. All the plagues, all the biblical things I brought upon Egypt, I will not bring upon you. I am the true healer. I am the ultimate healer, not botany, he says. And that's why, he says, Chizkiah hid the Sefer HaRefuos, and that's why his peers agreed with him, because with this Sefer, with this information, people would simply heal themselves of their ailments and would be misyayesh min ha-Torah v'ha-mitzvos. He doesn't just say they would fail to have bitachon. He says they would completely ignore Torah mitzvos. They no longer had any fear of God's punishment, or God, they no longer had any anticipation of God's reward. They would say, we can handle this. You know, we can take care of ourselves, and we don't need God, and so on. And that's why Chizkiah hid the Sefer HaRefuos. Other Rishonim express it more in terms of bitachon, in terms of even if they don't violate Averis. Rashba, for example, the Rashba says that Shlomo HaMelech wrote the Sefer HaRefuos, as opposed to Rabbeinu Bachya, who implies that some of this information at least went back to Moshe and Hashem, but Shlomo HaMelech wrote the Sefer HaRefuos, the wisest of all men. He taught them all kinds of useful knowledge, useful medical knowledge. People would be Somech Aleihem B'Cholyom, people would rely on this information when they were sick, and they would not be Darish as Hashem, they would not seek religious guidance when they got sick. That's why Chizkiah hid it, and so on. Rashi makes an interesting point. With regard to the brazen serpent, it says Chizkiah destroyed it. He didn't just hide it. It says he was kites, he crushed it, he pulverized it, he got rid of it. The Sefer HaRefuos, he says he merely hid. He didn't destroy. And he makes the distinction because the serpent, I mean, started out obviously as a divine talisman, a divine thing, but over the years it had been transformed into Avodah Zarah, it had been transformed into actually an idol. Idols have to be destroyed. Avodah Zarah has to be destroyed. Sefer Refuos was, there was nothing inherently wrong with it. It was a medical textbook, and there was nothing evil about it. There was nothing that required destruction. It was causing problems for people's religious devotion, and so he hid it, but it didn't have to be destroyed. So it was hidden somewhere. Where it is today, you know, I don't know, but it was hidden somewhere. The Rambam is the most famous discussion of the Sefer Refuos. The Rambam has an incredibly vehement denunciation of this idea. The Rambam says he heard such an interpretation also, and the Rambam savages it and scathingly rejects it. The Rambam says he heard such a pshat, anihir beis l'chadvarai. He tells you what his own interpretation is, which we'll get to momentarily, but the Rambam says that he heard some people explain the Sefer Refuos that it was simply a medical book, and Hashem took it away, and Chizkiyah took it away because people were not so mechal Hashem, they did not have bitachon, trust, reliance upon Hashem. He took it away to increase the need for their devotion to Hashem, reliance upon Hashem. Rambam says, Shema hefsid de'amaymer, hear the falseness, the badness of this doctrine, and hear it's full of shigyonos, it's full of errors and nonsense, he says. And how can people attribute to Chizkiyah and Hiveles of the stupidity, he says, Mashain Roy Liachis Kamo Lerue Hamon, something that isn't worthy of being attributed to simple people, he says, and certainly not to Chizkiyah and his esteemed colleagues. He says, let me ask you, he says, let me ask them, Lefi Daita Makal Vahamashubash, according to these people, you know, light and frivolous and erroneous attitudes, a person, I'll make an analogy, he says, a person is starving, a person is hungry. He goes and eats bread, he says. He eats, and with a firm conviction that the bread will cure him of his affliction of hunger. Has he committed a failure of bitachon? He has not been relying on Hashem. Is that a theologically sensible thing to say? We tell these people, Hey Shotim, listen, you idiots, he says. He says, just like we agree, we're no dil Hashem ba'is ha'achila, we thank Hashem, we acknowledge Hashem when we eat, we say Berach Samazon, we say Mazalach Men Aretz, we say Nodelacha, we thank Hashem for the food. We understand that the food comes from Hashem. We understand everything comes from Hashem. We understand that we owe thanks for everything we have to Hashem. That's true. But the fact that we take matters into our own hands and we eat without consulting a Navi, what shall I do if I'm hungry? That's fine and that's correct, he says. Kain odilo shehimti lo refua yirape cholye. So too, when I am sick, when I'm ill and I seek medical attention for my disease, and I know that, medical science can help me, says that there's nothing wrong. Of course, I thank Hashem for providing us with medical information, providing us with the skill to practice medicine. Of course I do that, but there's absolutely no theological problem with having reliable, useful, helpful medical information. I wouldn't even have to bother making this argument, he says, on this terrible idea, if not for the fact that it is mefursim, it is so widely known. Again, this was not just a popular idea, this was the idea that was apparently maintained by Gedolei HaRishonim. We mentioned Rabbeinu Bachya, mentioned the Rashba, and this is really, Rashi really seems to understand this way. Rashi on the Gemara in Brachos and on the Gemara in Pesachim, Rashi says that he hid the Sefer HaRefuos because they did not have humility and submission to Hashem. They just healed themselves and went on with their lives. In Brachos, Rashi says, he wanted them to daven more and engage in medicine less, or at least daven more. So this is the idea of a number of more traditional Rishonim, and the Rambam is vehemently opposed to this idea. I should just note, it's ironic, according to the traditional idea that the Rambam doesn't like, Chizkiyah here was taking action to promote bitachon, to lessen people's reliance on derech hateva, on the laws of nature, and to kind of increase their reliance on Hashem. It's ironic that two of the other actions that he took that he was criticized for, both of which, according to some commentaries, were rooted in a failure of bitachon. It says that he cut down the doors of the heichal. According to some commentaries, the criticism was he should have had more bitachon there, that Hashem would help him. He sealed off the gichon. He should have had more bitachon that Hashem would save Yerushalayim without the need to resort to such drastic measures. I think it's not a kasha. The point is these things are complex and subtle, and the right thing to do is not always clear. Yeah, sometimes how much bitachon one should have, how much one should rely on derech hateva may not always be clear, but it's ironic, nevertheless, that according to this standard, common, traditional approach, Chizkiah is doing opposite things. Sometimes he is, in all events, it seems that the right answer was more bitachon. The two times that he failed to have bitachon, he was criticized. The one time that he promoted bitachon, he was endorsed. But the Chizkiah himself, apparently, it was pretty tricky to get the balance exactly right. Now, the Rambam, as we mentioned, does not accept this idea. The Rambam refuses to accept that the sefer, that anybody, that Chizkiah would have hidden a sefer refuas, such a valuable thing, a repository of medical information. So what was the sefer refuas then, and why did he hide it? Rambam brings two other explanations. One is that the sefer refuas contained medical information, but not scientific information, and it contained occult medical information. It contained information dealing with astrological rituals, other types of occult rituals to heal people. And the Rambam notes also that does not mean this was actually a pagan superstitious work. This was an academic work, he said. This was a work written by a great chacham, a scholar, who felt it important to record the ancient pagan, the ancient superstitious traditions. Why it was so important, I'm not sure, but apparently it was considered of scholarly interest to record this stuff. The Rambam himself testifies that he was very widely read in ancient paganism and ancient superstition. He explains to us in the Mar Nevuchim that we can understand the context of many of the Torah's prohibitions much better if we understand the background in which these laws were given, what the Torah was trying to accomplish by many of its particular laws. But be that as it may, the Rambam's position here too is along similar lines, that this book contained occult medical information. It was never meant to be a practical manual for healing yourself. It was meant to be an academic work of interest to scholars. But people being people began to decide that they wanted to follow this. They began to misuse it and to actually use the therapies mentioned in this book. At that point, they decided that the bad outweighed the good. Whatever good there was, it was outweighed by the bad, and therefore they got rid of this book.
So the Rambam's analogy is kind of imperfect, because food is something everybody needs all the time, and refuah would be for specific people with specific problems. So you could say that we were all intended to take advantage of the things we are designed to do normally. When something goes wrong, that's where the... But even more, the Torah commands us to heal.
Yes.
So that to me seems like a stronger thing, almost like Chizkiah hiding that book would in fact be violating a Torah commandment to heal people who are
so
sick.
So both those points are crucial points. The argument against analogy is made by the Chazon Ish. We'll discuss it in a moment. And the point about Verapo Yerape also, we'll turn back to that soon. Yes, so we will cover both those points soon. Before we go there, I just want to finish the Rambam's interpretation of the Sefer Refuos. Second idea the Rambam gives, and this one is something that is even more relatable, something that is a critical current bioethical dilemma, the family of bioethical dilemmas. The Rambam suggests that the Sefer Refuos contained information about poisons and their antidotes. It contained information that was potentially dangerous, but also potentially invaluable in saving lives. The book was originally written as a poison control manual. It explained how poisons operated and what their effects on the bodies were and the body was and instructions about how to counteract them. It was originally, of course, meant as a first aid manual, a manual of poison control. People, hishchisu darkam, they began to use the information for nefarious purposes to concoct poisons and to kill. At that point, Chizkiah made the decision that the harm this book was causing was outweighing the good, and therefore they had to hide it. And this, of course, is an extremely current bioethical dilemma. We have people who are weaponizing H1N1 in the laboratory and claiming that we can study how it works, and therefore, you know, if it ever gets out, God save the world, but in the meantime, we can study how it works to devise countermeasures, and much of the medical community was outraged at this. We have, you know, all kinds of stuff running around with cloning, with tampering with the genome, and so on. Without taking specific positions on any of these issues, these are obviously huge topics that require a lot of thought. Obviously, for the last 50 years, nuclear technology, you know, bioweapons, all this stuff, artificial intelligence today. So obviously, all these topics, there are great debates about, is there any knowledge that should be suppressed, that should either not be pursued or should be suppressed or should be controlled by governments and so on, authorities. These are all critical questions we have to deal with today. And according to the Rambam, this was a very early version of this debate, that the book itself, originally it was felt, or people were better than they later became. Originally, the balance was this information was considered useful rather than harmful, and at some point the pendulum swung, and the information began to the balance of good and bad from this information shifted toward the bad, and at that point they decided that they had to hide this book. Obviously, you know, today in the world of the internet, the cat gets out of the bag pretty quickly, and there's a lot of closing the barn door after. It wouldn't have worked for a book that had already been available, but even today there's work that's still, you know, carefully held inside library. Even today, you can't just download nuclear plans for building atomic weapons, and we still struggle with how to regulate information that potentially could do a lot more harm than good. So, returning to the basic question of the other idea, that the idea that too much medical information is not a good thing because it has a religiously counterproductive effect. So, as we mentioned, there are a number of Rishonim who seem to take this view, and the Rambam who sharply rejects it. One of the Rishonim who is often most closely associated with the more traditional view, the firmer view, that's not really the right word, but the more traditional view, is the Ramban. The Ramban's famous comments do not really occur in the context of the Sefer Refuos. The Ramban's comments occur in the context of his discussion of the medical profession in general. The Ramban says that when Jews act properly, when Jews have the proper religious and theological mindset, nothing in their lives is governed by Derech HaTeva, not in their person, not in their land. He says Hashem takes care of them, Hashem acts with them, Shalok Derech HaTeva. They will not need refuos, Kenei Hashem Rafecha, he says. This is what Tzaddikim did in the time of Nevuah, he says, in the time of prophecy, the righteous, when they did have a problem, they would not seek medical advice, they would go to the Navi. And he quotes a pasuk. It says, Gam b'chol yavlo darshas Hashem ki barofim. He said this about Chizkiah, I think it's actually about Asa. But it says, Asa, when he was sick, the Navi criticizes him and says, even when he was sick, he did not go to Hashem, he did not seek counsel from Hashem, but only, ki is a difficult word, rather barofim. This is why grammar is so important. There are two very different schools of thought in how to interpret this pasuk. The Ramban, Rashba before, we mentioned briefly, understand that the criticism is not just that he didn't go to Hashem, the criticism is that he did go to doctors. That per se is a problem. Other commentaries understand it to mean he only went to doctors, he didn't also, in parallel, have a proper religious reaction to the disease. He only went for medical treatment. Had he done both, that would have been the ideal. But the Ramban understands, no. The Ramban understands if that would have been the point, we would have just said he didn't go to Hashem. We wouldn't have mentioned the doctors. The fact that we mentioned the doctors, Ramban understands to mean that the doctors itself was adding insult to injury. Not only didn't he go to Hashem, instead he went to doctors, which is also wrong. Shouldn't have done that. This is the Ramban's attitude that people, at least tzaddikim, at least in the time of prophecy, shouldn't be seeking medical attention for ailments. They should be going to the Navi. Ma chelek l'rofim beveis osei ritzon Hashem. What place do physicians have in the home of those who do God's will? Hashem said, I'll take care of you. There is a place for doctors, he says. What we would call lifestyle advice. Their job is to prescribe machal umashka, to give you dietary advice about what foods are good. Today we'd probably add exercise and other things like that. So they can give you prophylactic advice, how to live your life well and in a healthy way, but not actually the treatment of disease. For that, the person should be going to the Navi. Now, Steve mentioned Verapa Yerape, that the Torah gives Rishus Lerofe Lerapas. The Ramban kind of turns it on its head. The Ramban said, yes, the Gemara in Bava Kamma, the Pasuk here, we'll discuss this more presently, but the Pasuk says in Mishpatim, the laws of civil claims, in this case it's the law of assault, the law of personal injury. It says, Ki rivun anashim, if two people shall quarrel, shall fight, and v'hikoyesh esreyehu, one strikes the other. So assuming it's not murder, assuming it's a non-lethal assault, it says that you pay various types of damages. Different places in the Torah describe the various five types of damages. The two that are described here in Mishpatim are Rak Shivto Yitain V'Rapo Yirape. He shall pay his lost wages for the time he's laid up and unable to work while recovering from the injury. And also, V'Rapo Yirape, he shall heal him, which Chazal, the Halacha, interprets to mean he shall compensate him for the medical costs incurred as a result of the assault, or the result of the injury. And the Talmud points out that if we're telling you that the assailant has to pay medical costs, it's clear that the Torah expects him to seek medical treatment. And the Talmud says in Bava Kamma, Mikan shenitna reshus l'rofe l'rapos. From here we see that that a physician has permission to practice his craft and to heal. So the Ramban, so on the one hand, this seems to be an open endorsement of the practice of medicine, but the Ramban turns it somewhat on its head. He says, if you read the language of the Talmud carefully, it doesn't say Nitna Rishus L'Chola L'Hisrapos. It doesn't say that the patient has permission to seek medical treatment. It says the doctor has permission, the physician has permission to heal. Once the person, the patient, who should have been on a higher madrega, who should have been behaving more spiritually and more religiously and gone to the Navi, once he has failed to do so, once he has instead chosen to pursue the avenue of medicine, he says, once he's come to you, you have permission to treat him, that he's not me'adas Hashem shechelkem b'chayim, he is not of the assemblage of God whose place is in the way of life. It's pretty critical. So then the Rofe can go along and can cooperate. And furthermore, he says the Rofe shouldn't be paralyzed by a concern for malpractice. Chashash me'yomis b'yad, we shouldn't worry about that too. As long as he's competent, as long as he's skilled. Topic for a different day, the rules of what standards the physician has to meet according to halacha. But it's according to the Ramban, it's a very grudging, very not lachatchila kind of tolerance of the practice of medicine. And therefore he says, if the person, these people who are fighting, who are quarreling, and one of them is injured and wants to get medical treatment, the Ramban says his famous principle, the Torah is lo tismok dinel anisim, the Torah never writes halachos that presume people are on extraordinarily high spiritual levels. The Torah does not rely on miracles, and therefore the Torah said, lo yech levi mikarev haaretz, the Torah acknowledges people will be poor, people will have problems, and so on. But however, b'rtzos Hashem darchei yesh, Ramban winds up, when Hashem favors the ways of a man, ein lo esek berofim, he has no business going to doctors.
So, it sounds like Ramban is kind of combining two thoughts. One is somebody gets sick, which from their view is just an act of God, and the other is an act of man injuring his fellow. And in fact, the injured party, by not seeking medical treatment, would be exacerbating the problems, would be increasing the cost to the person who hurt him, both for his ultimate healing and for his lost wages. So,
right. So the basic distinction between different types of injuries, injuries which are internal and kind of more natural, even congenital sometimes, as opposed to external injuries, trauma inflicted by another human being or by external sources, is also a distinction made by some Jewish thinkers. Ibn Ezra, for example, Ibn Ezra also commenting on the same verse, Verapo Yerape, you know, he begins also with the basic idea of Chazal, that it's clear from here that the Torah has tolerance, at the very least, tolerance and gives permission for the practice of medicine. Ibn Ezra makes a similar distinction. He says, the doctor only has permission to heal hamakos v'apatoim shiyiru b'chutz, things which are externally visible. Not entirely clear whether his distinction is based on visibility and therefore medicine in his time was more effective if they could actually see what they were doing and know what they were treating, or because what the causes were, external versus internal, whatever it is, broadly speaking, he makes this distinction that the license of the physician to heal is only for external injuries and wounds and so on. However, choli shu b'fnim, internal injuries, those are b'yad Hashem l'raposo, ki hu yachiv v'yachpash, Hashem is the one who hurts, and Hashem is the one who heals. And again, Asa, he understands the pasuk similar to Ramban, that there's a criticism of him not just for not going to the Navi, but also for Kiyum Barov. The question is how far the Ramban takes this. Again, does the Ramban mean just in the case where someone else is involved, where someone else has liability for it? Ramban seems to be making a much broader point. He invokes Asa, which was a question of ordinary disease. Asa was sick, and it wasn't because anybody hurt him, I don't think. But the Ramban does seem to be taking it much further than Ibn Ezra, and seems to be saying in general he does not approve of a tzaddik going to a doctor. It's only the people in a fallen state who don't live their lives with such constant awareness of God. But we'll return to this a little more as we go. Yes.
So when the Kohanim are doing, we say that to feel on the dreams, we say if our dreams are the refuah, and it says Kachizkiyahu Melchuda. So is that the same king?
So Chizkiyah is the king we're discussing who had the issue with the Sefer Refuahs and the snake. The pasuk of Gam B'chol Yevlo Darshas Hashem, the text of the Ramban I have here says Chizkiyah, but I believe it was actually Asa, who was an earlier king, as Ibn Ezra has it. I believe that pasuk was actually said by Asa, a different sickness. Chizkiyah was sick at one point in his, and Hashem healed him, I think. And I think
it was the need of Refuah from Hashem.
Rest, yes.
So because of this issue,
I'm curious. Right, so I think that pasuk was actually by Asa, who was criticized for seeking the seeking medical treatment.
Now, these Rishonim seem to be having the differences of opinion, but when you learn the Gemara, you seem to have a lot of dapim dedicated to medicinal
information. Yes. So Dr. Anninger is pointing out the Talmud itself, you know, maybe they hid the original Sefer Refuot, but the Talmud itself has many folio that constitute but also a form of Sefer Refuot. Commentaries asked this question, and Narsha, I believe I saw quoted, asked this question. So again, according to the Rambam himself, that beautiful, the Rambam doesn't accept this pshat. According to the other commentaries, they do have to grapple with this, that why is the Talmud giving us medical advice? And one answer to that will emerge from the point I want to make now, which is, where does the Ramban fit into the whole discussion? Is he squarely opposed to Rambam? Is he squarely on the side of the other Rishonim? Is there really a machlokas here? So there is a school of thought that tries to harmonize the different views and argue that there is really no real machlokas. Even discussing the Ramban himself, forget about whether he agrees or disagrees with the Ramban, even discussing the Ramban himself, the Achronim generally explain that the Ramban's doctrine falls firmly into the category of don't try this at home, consult your rabbi first, that the Ramban's advice should not be followed by people like us, people in our generation. They say the Ramban was talking primarily about people who lived in the time of prophecy, people who were great tzaddikim, like Chizkiah. The Ramban is aspirational. He was referring to people on an extraordinarily high madrega. The Ramban himself acknowledges in his discussion that the physician does treat people who come to him. Now, we're going to discuss soon Akedas Yitzchak, who had problems with this Ramban. Well, one of the questions of Akedah was, there's a prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. If somebody wants a cheeseburger and asks me to cook it for him, I don't say, you shouldn't be eating it, but now that you are, I'll help you prepare it. You say, no, you're not allowed to be eating this, and I will not help you, because it's wrong. If it was really wrong to seek medical attention, what kind of business is this? The Ramban says, the patient has no rishus, the rishus is for the doctor, the rishus is not for the patient. Generally speaking, in the ordinary system of values of the Torah, if someone has no permission, no halak permission to do something, I have no halak permission to help him. So the Ramban clearly doesn't mean that it's actually usur for an ordinary person to seek medical treatment. The Ramban himself was a physician. The Ramban himself engaged in the practice of medicine for Jews and non-Jews. The Ramban himself, in his other works, talks about what a great mitzvah it is to practice medicine. Does not say it's an avera. So the position of the Ramban himself is much more nuanced. The way it's generally understood is that, again, it's aspirational for people who ideally would live on a very high spiritual level. They should be having this more direct relationship with God and not seeking medical treatment, but the Ramban agrees that for ordinary people who are not on that madrega, they are not wrong in seeking medical treatment, and therefore Rav Dessler, among others, have tried to argue that the Rambam and the Ramban do not really disagree. The Ramban is talking about people on one particular madrega, the Rambam is talking about people on a lower madrega, and it's not really a machlokas. I don't think this really holds water. Even if we accept that the Ramban does distinguish, first of all, it will be noted that they were both arguing about Chizkiah and his generation. The Rambam says that anyone who suggests that Chizkiah would have hit a medical textbook is out of his mind, basically, and the others, like Rabbi Nabachia, the Rashba, have said that's exactly why Chizkiah hit the medical textbook in Rashi. So they were clearly talking about the same circumstance, the same event, the same action Chizkiah took of hiding the Sefer Refuos. So the Rambam says that's crazy, and the other ones say it was a noble and righteous thing Chizkiah did. And in general, as I said, Akedas Yitzchak himself has a vehement rejection of the Ramban. Explicitly, he doesn't know anything about harmonizing everything together. He says Ramban is flat out wrong. The Akedah is writing on Parshas Vayishlach. Parshas Vayishlach begins with Yaakov's preparations for what he expects to be the onslaught of Esav, the attack by Esav, and the Torah describes various measures he took to secure the safety of himself and his family. He engaged in diplomacy with bribes. He engaged in military planning, tactical planning to split his camp into two. He prayed to Hashem. He asked Hashem to help him. He certainly had a religious component to his preparations too. But besides that, he engaged in plenty of Derech HaTeva planning, both in terms of the diplomacy and bribery as well as the military planning. So the Akedah has a long essay there developing the theme that what he calls charitzus or hishtadlus, the idea of human effort, the idea, the anti-fatalist idea, the idea that we should try to do whatever we can to secure a good future for ourselves, to overcome the circumstances in which we find ourselves, to make the best out of whatever situation we find ourselves in. He spends a lot of time Yeah, for us, it's kind of, we take this for granted, but there are, of course, as we discussed in the context of Bechira, there are, of course, religious attitudes that push for a much more passive and fatalist attitude, and Keda spends a lot of time refuting and rejecting and rebutting this idea, arguing that Judaism believes in vigorous efforts to protect yourself and to overcome your circumstances and so on. And after going on like this for several pages, Akeda says, and after all this, that I've demonstrated to you by argument, by citations of precedent from the Bible, from Chazal, after all this, he says, now see what the Ramban has written in Parshat Bechukosai, where he has argued that ideally Jews should not seek medical attention, but should merely react religiously to disease. This is completely against everything I've demonstrated. He says, Mi Yishmaelav al Adavar Azeh, who will listen to the Ramban? This is so completely antithetical to correct theology as he understands it, he says. He makes the argument about Lepnei Iver I mentioned earlier. One of the big themes of the Akedah there, one of his major theological arguments that he makes, the framework he works with, is that yes, it's true, people who are great tzaddikim, Hashem will help them no matter what happens, no matter what they do. People who are great rishayim, Hashem will punish them no matter how hard they try. But people who are benanim, to some extent, the laws of nature and the ordinary ways of the world will determine their fate. And a person should always consider himself as in that category of benanim, where his efforts will be decisive, and therefore a person should do whatever he can. He makes the Lepnei Iver argument that if it would really be wrong for someone to seek medical attention, it would be equally wrong for the medical practitioner to provide medical treatment, he says. The Ramban's argument from Asa, the Ben Ezra Ramban's argument from Asa, that Asa was criticized for seeking medical attention, he says. No, again, the criticism of Asa was that he neglected to go to Hashem. He only went to the doctors. Certainly the right thing to do would have been for him to go to both. And therefore, he completely rejects the Ramban. So he explicitly says the Ramban is wrong. He doesn't say the Ramban is talking about different people, different madrega, and so on. He says the Ramban is simply wrong. That's the position of Akedah, and I think, to me, it seems pretty clear that would be the Rambam's attitude too, and he would not simply accept that the Ramban was talking about people on a certain madrega, which doesn't apply to us.
Who was the what bit Memphis did the Akedah's Rebbe?
So it's a good question. I don't know the direct chain of transmission. The Akedah is very similar in many aspects of our thinking to the Abarbanel. They both worked. They were both, you know, well-versed in, you know, medieval scholastic philosophy. They were familiar with, you know, with the Rambam. They were familiar. They were writing about the turn, the 15th century, the turn of the 16th century. They were both familiar with the trends of Jewish thought. They did know the Zohar. They did quote it, not as heavily and not in as mystic a way as later thinkers did. They quoted it as Midrash and Elam. They quoted it as another Midrash containing. They're not really Kabbalists. They're more traditional than Rambam. They often criticize Rambam for going a little too far, being a little too radical in his commitment to Greek philosophy and his kind of unyielding, rigorous commitment and willingness to, you know, bend Judaism to fit Greek philosophy. They did argue strongly for a more confidence in our own tradition and to reject Aristotle when he was wrong and so on. But they were somewhat rationalist in that they did believe that, you know, that Seichel was a good guide to truth. They were pretty, you know, more on the side of Chazal and less on the side of Aristotle. But they were people have sometimes commented that more about the Abarbanel, but the Akedah is really in the same boat, that they were moderates and kind of lost on both sides. They spent their lives fighting the radicals in their time the ones who were far to the left of them, and today they've been written off by some of the right for not being firm enough, for being a little not traditional enough all the time. Who their actual rebbes were, I don't know. The people they quote heavily are the early Rishonim. They quote heavily are pretty much the classic 8 or 12 people they quote are the classic Rishonim: Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Rambam, Chasdai Kreskes, Drash HaSaran, Rabbi Yosef Albo, and the Sefer Ikarim, Ralbag. So yeah, that's pretty much where they fit in. But this is Akedah. Returning to another point Steve made before, the point of the Rambam's analogy between eating and between medical treatment, disease and medical treatment, where Steve was pointing out that eating is ubiquitous. Everyone needs to live. All life needs to eat basically to live, and that it's routine. It's nothing out of the ordinary. while disease is abnormal. It's not the normal state of things, and arguably it's conceptually much easier to argue that that's a particular message from Hashem as opposed to just the normal way of functioning. The Chazon Ish essentially makes his point. He gently points out, as we've been noting, that the pshat that Ramban is so sharply condemning is actually a pshat that has, you know, venerable support in the Rishonim. Rambam's analogy, he says, is not perfect precisely for this reason. Moreover, he ties us into the other point Steve made, which we've addressed already a little bit, that Mikan Shanitin Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos, as the Ramban says, indicate, well, on the one hand, you do have Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos. On the other hand, you see you need Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos. Well, why do you even need Rishus? Why would the Torah even have to tell you that you have Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos? This is something, a question which is raised by many commentaries. What's the Chiddush? What needs permission here? What needs licensing exactly? So one of the dominant approaches in the Rishonim is this idea that the default position would have been one of respect for God's will and passivity in the face of what we would perceive as divine action. What the Rishonim call Nirikas Soser Gzeres HaMelech, Tosa's language. We might have thought that, again, Tosa distinguishes between Makabi de Adam and Makabi de Shemayim when it comes to human inflicted injury. We might think, okay, that wasn't God's plan. That was something somebody did. When it comes to non-human inflicted injury, naturally occurring injury, we might think that ailment, we might think that's Gzeres Melech, and it's wrong to be Soser Gzeres Melech. There are earlier Midrashim that discuss this also, that explicitly explore the tension between Hashem wants us to be able to improve our lot and the idea of Soser Gzeres Melech. But the Chazon Ish, you know, working off this tradition of Tosus and Ibn Ezra and Raman, basically says that even after we have permission from Hashem that it's not Soser Gzeres Melech, that's limited, and that's maybe grudging to some extent, that for a person who is not religiously strong enough and needs to avail himself of this permission, the permission is, I guess, like Yivas Torah, it's kind of grudging, it's a recognition that not everyone in the world can be in such a high madrega, and therefore the Torah allows it, and that's disease, and there's no analogy between that and eating bread when one is hungry. This idea that the healing someone from a naturally occurring disease is not proper, may not be proper even after the pasuk, the basic sheet of the Ben Ezra doesn't really have any traction. Obviously, we know the minhag certainly is we all seek medical attention for naturally occurring ailments. But there are some outlier views. Every now and then you find some authority who does actually try to limit the permission of the Rofe in significant ways. There's a tshuva. Tzitz Eliezer brings a tshuva from the Sefer Sha'arei Tzedek, I think, who was discussing a woman who needed some type of fertility treatment. I don't know what they were treating exactly. This is a while ago. What condition they were treating and how they were treating it. But this posik actually argued that it's not permitted. That the heter of Mishrus L'Rofei L'Rapos is people who are sick, people who are suffering from pain or some injury. The inability to reproduce is not considered sickness and is not included in the Mishrus L'Rofei L'Rapos. And before we dismiss that, we should note that, well, we have a parallel to that in modern insurance companies who, you know, contraception you can get covered pretty easily, but fertility treatments is an uphill battle. You can read these articles, and partly because it's just numbers. Contraception is pretty cheap, and fertility treatment can run you into the five and six figures. But beyond that, yeah, there is, you know, genuine debate today to what extent infertility should be considered a disease and as worthy of treatment. We're constantly arguing mental health and addiction and all kinds of stuff. What is a disease and what is not? But there actually is a shita in halacha that says that infertility is not a disease and therefore is not something that a rofe can treat. Once again, this is a das yachid. This has no traction in later poskim. Tzitz Eliezer himself brings it and shoots it down and says, no, it is a disease. We do treat it as something of paramount importance. And that, of course, is the mainstream halacha, except virtually unanimous, that we do treat infertility the way we treat anything else. Tzitz Eliezer himself, though, also carves out, though, one exception, which is also, he's a das yachid and nobody really accepts what he says, but that Tzitz Eliezer, as we've mentioned previously, argues that the Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos does not include purely cosmetic surgery. Based on this idea, he says, you see, the Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos is a chiddush, and you need Rishus, and the license has to be given by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It does not include purely cosmetic surgery. As we've noted in the past, many 20th century poskim have discussed cosmetic surgery, and by and large, they are lenient. Some of the poskim in the earlier part of the century were reluctant to allow it, but that was for other reasons, because it was dangerous, both the surgery and the anesthesia, and they discussed questions of the pain involved. The consensus, especially toward the end of the 20th century, has been that the dangers have been contained, the medical science has progressed to the point at which the dangers are minimal, and the chovel ba'atmo, the self-harm issue, also not an issue because it's constructive and for a good reason. And we should also note that Eliezer is not necessarily opposed to something like a person was disfigured in a fire or had some other kind of injury or even a congenital injury like a cleft palate or something, things which are actual disfigurements. What he was really opposed to was people who decided that some body part should be longer or shorter or bigger or smaller just because somebody thinks they would make themselves, he would make himself or herself more attractive. That's what he was opposed to. And he basically invoked some kind of Gzeres Melech argument. Hashem made you like this. Who are you to think that you know better? And even though the Torah gave Rishus L'Rofei L'Rappos, that's only for actual disease, actual ailment, doesn't apply to simply improving your looks. However, once again, just as the Tzitz Eliezer responded to the earlier tshuva by saying it's a Das Yachid, the consensus of poskim in the 20th century rejects the Tzitz Eliezer's view too. Most poskim were Moshe Feinstein, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and many others. Again, a lot of them were discussing more serious cases, not just purely purely to get a more attractive look, but people actually had disfigurements. But nevertheless, the trend among poskim, as I understand it, is that no, the Rishus L'Rofei L'Rappos should be understood broadly, whatever the theology behind it is. The Ramban, as I said earlier, the Ramban we generally assume does not apply in our generation, and the concern for Sosir Gzeres Melech, after the Torah gave us Rishus L'Rofei L'Rappos, most poskim don't make these distinctions. We generally assume that the Rishus is broad and all-encompassing, and we allow the doctor to practice pretty much any aspect of his craft.